Mukta Sandasya Jayate. Evam Prasanna Manaso. Bhagavat Bhakti Yogataha. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. Mukta Sangasya Jayate. Evam. Thus. Prasanna. Enlivened. Manasaha. Of the mind. Bhagavat Bhakti. The devotional service of the Lord. Yogataha. By contact of. Bhagavat. Regarding the personality of Godhead. Tattva, knowledge. Vijnanam, scientific. Mukta, liberated. Sangasya, of the association. Jayate, becomes effective. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord, gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.3, it is said that out of many thousands of ordinary men, one fortunate man endeavors for perfection in life. Mostly men are conducted by the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus they are engaged always in lust, desire, hankerings, ignorance, and sleep. But out of many such man-like animals, there is actually a man who knows the responsibility of human life and thus tries to make life perfect by following the prescribed duties. And out of many thousands of such persons who have thus attained success in human life, one may scientifically know about the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. In the same Bhagavad Gita, 1855, it is also said that scientific knowledge of Sri Krishna is understood only by the process of devotional service, bhakti yoga. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadha Mahyam Tadhati Shapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Shahagana Raghunatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vancha Kopitrubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyeva Cha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vaj Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Dama Hare Dama Rama Rama Evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. Evam, refers to what has been described in the previous verses, tadara jastamo bhava kamalo padayastriye chete tairanavidtam stitam sattve prasiviti. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving a pure devotee, one becomes free from the unwanted things in the heart, especially kama, lobha, lust, greed, and so on, which arise from the modes of passion and ignorance. One becomes situated, stitam sattve prasidati, in the sattvagun, or as Srila Prabhupada describes, the mode of unalloyed goodness, shuddha sattva. The unalloyed goodness means no touch of passion, no touch of ignorance. That unalloyed goodness is actually achieved only by pure devotional service, or by devotional service. Otherwise, it's not found in this material world. Goodness is always mixed with passion, with ignorance. But by devotional service, one can come to the platform of pure goodness. Sattvam vishuddham vasudeva shabditam. That's called shuddha sattva. So this is not for everyone, or not attained by everyone. Mostly people are engaged in the lower modes of nature, ignorance, passion, as Prabhupada describes. But manusyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhi. Out of thousands of such men, one may take up the prescribed duties for advancement in spiritual life, and of thousands who've actually attained perfection in that process, hardly one can understand Krishna, because Krishna is understood only by unalloyed devotional service. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tattvata. Krishna is factually understood only in that way. Well, the person who is engaged in the process of hearing and chanting and serving becomes prasanna manasa. Prasanna means satisfied. Manasa, his mind becomes satisfied. The modes of nature, the lower modes of nature, disturb the mind so that one is always dissatisfied. Sada sumud vigna dhyam asadgrahat. Prahlad Maharaj describes that because the materialists are always grabbing for something which has no substantial existence, their minds are always samud vigna, agitated, completely agitated. Sada samud vigna, completely agitated. Imagine you're grabbing for something. The famous example from Greek mythology was Tantalus, who was, I forget the reason, condemned to stand in water. And whatever fruit he wanted was either always above his head or it was reflected in the water below. That was more or less the story. The fruit was always just almost there, but he couldn't get it. So he was frustrated. He's frustrated. So the materialists are frustrated. They have their promised happiness, their promised security, stability, love, all of these things, and they don't get it because it's not actually there. There is nothing secure in this material world. There is no love in this material world. There is nothing, there's no true enjoyment in this material world. But they're trying to get it. So naturally they're frustrated or angry even. The picture of the angry man. We want our rights. We're entitled to this. You're cheating us. You're this. The world's no good. You're all a batch of angry. Because they're frustrated. whether their cause is, whether their assessment is true or not, is, may sometimes be, may sometimes not, but they're frustrated. They're looking for peace and happiness and love, and they're not getting it. Or they're looking for more than peace, happiness, and love. They're looking for excitement and stimulation. More and more and more. And they can't afford it. They can't get it. They can't. It has its consequences. So they're frustrated, disappointed. Because they're engaged in agitating the mind. Their process for happiness, practically speaking, is to agitate the mind and then try to satisfy the agitation, to get their minds going about something and then do something that's going to put out the fire in their minds. It's sex life. They're thinking about it, and then they go for it, and that's supposed to calm everything down, but instead they become more agitated. So this is passion and ignorance, frustration, disappointment, hopelessness, anger. But in the mode of goodness, there's satisfaction. Because there's knowledge. And there's detachment. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said that the symptom of knowledge is that all the senses become illuminated. Everything is seen in its proper perspective. And the mind becomes peaceful. Peace is not possible in the mode of passion. It's possible in the mode of goodness. And mode of ignorance, there's like the opposite of peace. There's sloth. Peace and sloth are not exactly the same thing. To be peaceful and to be drunk. The drunkard who's sleeping it off may look peaceful, but that's not actually peaceful existence. So, prasanna manasa, happy-minded. Prabhupada elsewhere translates it, happy-minded, prasanna manasa. The mind becomes happy by contact, bhagavad bhakti yogata, by contact of bhakti, bhagavad, to this personality of Godhead. The very same thing is confirmed here in the above words. No ordinary man, or even one who has attained success in human life, can know scientifically or perfectly the personality of Godhead. Perfection of human life is attained when one can understand that he is not the product of matter, but is in fact spirit. And as soon as one understands that he has nothing to do with matter, he at once ceases his material hankerings and becomes enlivened as a spiritual being. He understands that my senses are not going to make me happy, gratifying them is not going to work. But if I engage, if I understand that I'm spirit-soul, my happiness is already there. The spirit-soul is by nature blissful. When I come to the spiritual platform, nasochati, nakanshati, what is that? Brahmabhuta, prasanna. Same word, prasanna, manaso, prasanna, atma. The soul becomes satisfied, the mind becomes, atma also means mind. Brahmabhuta, when one comes to the spiritual platform, prasanna, his mind is happy. Prabhupada said the first symptom of a self-realized person is that he's jolly. Prasanna, nashochati nakankshati, he has nothing to hanker for and nothing to lament about. This is the preliminary stage of spiritual realization. And after that stage, madbhaktim labhate pran, one engages in the devotional service of Krishna. The attainment of success, understanding that one is a spiritual being. As soon as one understands that he has nothing to do with matter, he at once ceases his material hankerings and becomes enlivened as a spiritual being. He becomes joyful and enlivened. Yes, I'm spirit-soul. This attainment of success is possible only when one is above the modes of passion and ignorance, or in other words, when one is actually a Brahmin by qualification. A Brahmin is the symbol of Saptaguna, or the mode of goodness, and others who are not in the mode of goodness are either Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, or less than Shudras. The Brahminical stage is the highest stage of human life because of its good qualities. So one cannot be a devotee unless one at least qualifies as a Brahmin. A devotee is already a Brahmana by action. But that is not the end of it. As referred to above, such a Brahmin has to become a Vaishnava, in fact, to be actually in the transcendental stage. A pure Vaishnava is a liberated soul and is transcendental even to the position of a Brahmin. In the material stage, even a Brahmin is also a conditioned soul, because although in the Brahminical stage, the conception of Brahma or transcendence is realized, scientific knowledge of the Supreme Lord is lacking. One has to surpass the Brahminical stage and reach the Vasudev stage to understand the personality of Godhead, Krishna. The science of the personality of Godhead is the subject matter for study by the postgraduate students in the spiritual line. Foolish men, or men with a poor fund of knowledge, do not understand the Supreme Lord, and they interpret Krishna according to their respective whims. The fact is, however, that one cannot understand the science of the personality of Godhead unless one is freed from the contamination of the material modes, even up to the stage of a Brahmin. When a qualified Brahmin factually becomes a Vaishnava, in the enlivened state of liberation, he can know what is actually the personality of Godhead. The Brahmin is supposed to be in the mode of goodness, and therefore he's supposed to know what is Brahma, what is spirit, Brahmajanatiti, Brahma. It's okay. He's supposed to know. And samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate. When I know that I'm spirit soul, then the next thing is to act like spirit soul. The action or activity, the engagement of the spirit soul is to serve Krishna, not just to be floating, I'm spirit soul. But if I'm spirit soul, I have to do something. I have to act accordingly. And that action is called devotional service. So, sagunan samitichayatan, Brahmabhuvyaya kolpate, mam chayo vyabhacharena bhakti yogena sevate. If someone engages in the service of the Lord, then he transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the spiritual platform. And on that spiritual platform, he engages in Krishna's service. Bhagavat-tattva vijnana, he factually understands Bhagavat-tattva, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, is a person to be understood, Prabhupada says, scientifically, doesn't mean by material experimentation, but in detail, vijnana. Vijnana means science, vijnana means realization, vijnana means applied knowledge. Prabhupada said realization means that you know how to apply it. Realized knowledge in surgery means that you could actually do a surgical operation, not just that you've read a surgery textbook and could explain how the job is done. So that's realized knowledge. The surgeon has realized knowledge, experienced knowledge, knowledge he can actually apply. So that vijnana implies that kind of knowledge, scientific knowledge, applied knowledge, realized knowledge, assimilated knowledge. These are all terms Srila Prabhupada has used. Bhagavat-tattva vijnana means that one actually understands the personality of Godhead, not only theoretically, but in fact. Bhagavat-tattva vijnana. That's possible when one comes to the mode of goodness and the mode of passion. There are some scholars, you know, they're great scholars of Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. They can tell you right, left, and forwards and backwards so many things about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, about Bhagavad Gita, about so many things. But they still drink, they still smoke, whatever else. They're not actually situated on the Brahminical stage, and therefore they don't have access to Bhagavat Tattva Vigyan, realized knowledge. Otherwise, if they had realized knowledge of the personality of Godhead, they'd be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead according to the principles of Bhakti Yoga. But instead, they study Bhakti Yoga formally or from an academic point of view, and therefore they don't capture the effect. They don't become prasanna manasa, completely satisfied in mind, happy-minded. They don't get it. They don't get that realized understanding. But a person who follows the process recommended in the Bhagavatam, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna, Nityam Bhagavata Sevya, always hearing and chanting and serving, he'll actually become freed from passion and ignorance, and he'll actually, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param, he'll engage in the service of the Lord. And Mukta Sangasya Jayate. He's automatic, because he's engaged in the service of the Lord, liberation is automatic for him. Vilvamangala Thakur says, Muktir Mukulitanjali Sevatasman. Because I'm engaged in the service of Krishna, Mukti has become like my maidservant. She's begging, please take me, please take me, please take me. The impersonalists are begging for mukti. They're dedicated to attaining mukti. But when one is dedicated to the service of Krishna, then mukti is a byproduct. One automatically gets mukti. Sanatana Goswami has a nice discussion of this in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He says that Mukti Devi is rejected by the devotees. The devotee doesn't want mukti. Mama janmani janmani shere bhavatad bhaktir hoitaki. Just wants to serve Krishna. So, but the, therefore, Mukti Devi takes shelter of Bhakti Devi. I've been rejected by the devotees, so please give me shelter. So, having attained shelter at the feet of Bhakti Devi, Mukti Devi is there. So if one is engaged in devotional service, bhakti, then Mukti Devi is already falling at his feet. Please take me also. Please take me also. One doesn't have to separately try for liberation. When one is in touch with Krishna, he's automatically out of touch with Maya. Yaha Krishna taha Maya nahi adhikar. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Any questions?
So, you're saying that the currently scholars are there. We see Gaudiya Vaishnava scholars.
You have to speak up.
Then that sometimes when we see the person taking the process of devotional service in half their slaves, actually, Chakra Papa, and then they also sometimes explain. And of course, we understand it's different, perhaps you can say something.
They also display.
They also display some gross attachments or something, which we call as fall down or something, and then other followers get to do that.
Yeah.
But obviously there's a difference because they are actually in touch with the pure devotees.
Yeah, they're making progress. Mm-hmm. They're engaged in the process. And because they're not perfectly engaged, or because they're inattentive, or they commit some offense, then they have problems. But they're in the process. The others are not even in the process.
Well, they are also in some sense because they are reading and trying to understand something.
They're something you can say, just like Prabhupada said that the Prakriti Sahajas, although they're not following strictly, still they're somehow attached to Krishna. So it's like a future hope for them. So it's true, the scholars who are interested in Krishna, it's a special thing. They're interested in Krishna, at least. Of course, some of them are demonic in their explanations of Krishna. But even that is good in one sense. They're somehow connected to Krishna. Like Kamsa was better than so many other demons because he directly attracted the attention of Krishna, where he was directly focused on Krishna. But there are also scholars who are not, who are sympathetic, who are appreciative, who perhaps have adopted the scholarly position because they have some weakness of heart. They don't have the commitment, whatever it takes to say, yes, let me commit my life to the service of Krishna. But they'll get as close as they can while still sitting on the fence. They'll try to take an observational post and observe the devotional service of Krishna, discuss the pastimes of Krishna or the activities of Krishna, perhaps do participant research, visiting Krishna temples or taking part in kirtan, associating with devotees. So they get as close as they can without committing themselves, without sacrificing their neutrality and actually committing themselves, yes, let me serve Krishna. Sometimes we see that it goes the other way, that someone who's engaged in devotional service backs off and becomes like an academic observer of Krishna consciousness, leaves the association of devotees and becomes an academic observer rather than a participant in the process.
So now my question is more clear to me. Mm. So the thing is that, so that was the context. The point is that I think I was trying to inquire that. So, but this verse is actually talking about possibly scientific knowledge of the law, like going past that state of devotional service, and therefore we have to be very careful and not think that we are already on the path.
By going past the devotional
service? Going past this path, being freed of modes of passion.
Yeah.
And we should not assume that
we are there. Yeah, where as Prabhupada said, the postgraduate stage is being described, we shouldn't assume that as soon as we enter the institution, we're immediately postgraduates. We have to do the work and gradually be promoted to that stage.
That
was your point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something else? Yes?
Can I ask a general question?
Hmm.
I know sometimes in your editing where you are referring to a manuscript.
Excuse me?
When you're editing, you refer to a manuscript of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if that will ever be published, the manuscript as it is.
Will the manuscript of Bhagavad Gita as it is ever be published? I don't know. It's sometimes made available for researchers with a specific purpose.
I think the devotees would really like to.
Oh, I'm sure they'd like to have it. Problem is that some devotees might find it confusing, or some devotees might use it to confuse others, because the manuscript is not always so easy to understand. Because we have two editions of Bhagavad Gita, and one says A and the other says B, there's some people who are so stupid, I use the word advisedly, stupid, that they immediately say, oh, here's A and here's B. So B is a deviation. And it doesn't occur to their dull minds that B might be closer to what the author said than A. So when you get such people who, either because of their lack of intelligence or their lack of purity, broadcast such conclusions, what will they do if you give them an original manuscript to chew on? Therefore, it's said in another scripture of the Bible, cast not thy pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and rend thee. Rend thee means to stick a tusk in your, in you. Therefore, our BBT policy so far is, if some qualified person needs to see the manuscript, then it's available. The translators, the BBT staff, Tamal Krishnamaraj wanted to see it for his doctoral dissertation. So when such qualified people have a reason, and yes, they're qualified and they have a reason, then it's made available. Otherwise, so far, we've held back.
It seems like all of Prabhupada's disciples are qualified people.
It would seem that all of Prabhupada's disciples are qualified people, but what seems may be misleading. There are people who are qualified Prabhupada disciples and who are very outspoken about what Prabhupada wanted or about what Prabhupada said, and yet they're known to be kick back a few six packs of beer now and then. And they want to be like leaders of, standing for the truth. At the same time, they'll talk about, how the BBT should function and what kind of corporate structure Prabhupada wanted. And at the same, they'll sue the BBT. At the same time, they'll be arrested for driving under the influence. So whether all of Prabhupada's disciples are truly qualified, not just by initiation, but by action, is, questionable. Not all of us, after all, there are people who say that I'm not qualified.
It's like holding a treasure.
Excuse me?
It's like holding a treasure. If it's really Prabhupada's words, it's like a treasure.
Well, it was asked by Prabhupada, by Rameshwar Maharaj, back in Los Angeles in the 1970s, that we have these manuscripts, but we're thinking that it's better not to distribute them, but to keep them, locked up. And Prabhupada agreed.
Referring to that manuscript?
Excuse me?
Referring
to manuscripts in general, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the whole stock of them. So I don't know that that means that we have to make that an eternal policy, but it means that if the BBT does make that a policy, it's already pre-approved by Srila Prabhupada. All that said, I have a digital copy of the manuscript, and if you like, after the class, I can show you whatever you'd like to see.
Yeah, I would like to have that. I'd like to be able to read it. I understand that Prabhupada, his English, he considers his English not up to par, and he gave the manuscript to somebody, hired people to edit and to make it poetic, and he put his stamp of approval on that. But at the same time, we like Prabhupada's inappropriate English, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, those who like Prabhupada's English in its more primordial form, should we say, they're the people who prefer the second edition of Bhagavad Gita, which is closer to Prabhupada's original than the second, than the first edition.
The first edition being the blue-purple one, or the...
You want to walk over and pick up the two editions so I can explain to her which
one? I know the Macmillan edition, what would you call them?
The Macmillan edition is the first edition, and the present BBT edition is the second one. The second one is actually closer to Srila Prabhupada's original language than the first.
Yeah, I know that.
I'm not sure the relation between these two.
This one is the present BBT edition. These are the Macmillan edition. I don't even know what they're doing here because they're published by some outside publisher.
Well, that's an issue, isn't
it? It is.
They did have prophets. Go ahead.
There is, Advaita Maharaj has kindly made available 68. Many quotations from the manuscript or references to the manuscript in a letter that he wrote to me many years ago.
In letter to you, and also if you'd like to see really extensive examples from the manuscript, not the whole thing, but pages of, you know, a lot of stuff, you can go to the website called bbtedit.com. And there you can go to Gita Revisions Explained, and you'll see side by side, first edition, second edition, and manuscript edition, the manuscript itself. Excuse me? Yeah, well, it, as much as there is, I don't know if you've,
it,
have you seen?
Is it complete?
No, it's not complete, but it's extensive.
Some of it was lost at some point?
The manuscript itself?
Yeah.
It's a little bit much for me to explain right now, but if you go to bbtedit.com, it explains the different stages of manuscripts that we have. Some are, seem to be typed by Prabhupada, some are dictation. Transcription from what's dictated. There's also a DVD which answers a lot of questions about this, which I can also give you a copy of right after class, put out by the Northern European BBT. Where I and Dravida and other devotees answer a lot of the questions that people have. Probably the next thing will be publishing, however, which people have asked for and we didn't have just because we didn't know where it was, is the copy on which I made the corrections. See, when I edited it, I took the Macmillan edition that's over here and actually wrote on the page the various revisions. And people have said, well, you know, we want to see that. And I said, well, I don't know where it was because the copy was missing. But it's been found. Dravida found it in a trunk, and it's been digitized, and we'll probably be releasing that as the next thing that devotees will have access to. And that explains a lot also. I think devotees will find that quite illuminating. Okay.
Thank you for class, Maharaj.
Welcome. Why did they take 32 pictures out of the 72 Gita? I believe it was in response to requests from the book distributors. Most of the things done in relation, practically all of the things done in relation to the format of the Bhagavad Gita, the paper, the page size, the size of the index, the illustrations, the placement of the illustrations, all that sort of thing, are usually done in response to the requests of the book distributors, who are usually interested in a smaller book, lighter weight, lower cost, having the pictures up front where you can easily turn to them and show people. They have various, you know, things that they tell us. We like it like this. We like it. We want it this way. And so the BBT tries to respond to the requests of the book distributors because they're the ones who are, you know, out there giving the book to people. So that would be the reason. Otherwise, it's not that, you know, the editors or the BBT directors don't like this picture or don't like that picture. It's almost always in response to the consultation with the book distributors.
Yeah. That's at least after the Bhagavad Gita, I think there is an ongoing effort by the BBT to quote unquote edit all other books of Prabhupada, like Bhagavatam, Chaitanya, and all that.
Yeah.
And at least I know of one definite instance, you know, if you know, children, which has been kind of addressed to several BBT, that when Dravida made a change in the first paragraph, Chaitanya, and all then he actually wrote the Govinda at the time, and I had it. Well, I made this change because I just, that's one of the tough ones, but I finally decided to make it.
Right.
But that's not the basis for changing anything.
Correct.
So now my question is, and then since then, I saw recently in Bombay, I don't know whether I understood what you said, you know, Anantu, the devotee who lives in...
Anantatirtha.
Anantu, who lives in...
Holland?
Milano. He works at the BBT.
Ananda Swarup?
No.
Who?
Maybe you do not. Anyway.
What's his name?
Anantu.
Anantu?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think that's what they call him in Tamil.
Yeah.
Shortened, so I don't know.
Ananda.
So in any case, so I know him from Bhakta Desa, so Anantu. That's a complete initiative.
So
he was saying that he and his brother, I asked him what are they doing now, he said that, well, we're doing for BBT, we're just going through the entire
Chaitanya Charitamrita
something, and he said in English, and we are all, not even all the places where the language needs to be improved and corrected. Something like that you're saying.
Here's what it is. There's, I believe it's...
The BBT now has an explicit policy that no change should be made on any grounds of, people thinking, well, this should be changed, this is better if it's written like this.
No, BBT doesn't have an explicit policy that nothing should be changed if just because someone thinks it's better. The person should have a ground for thinking it's better, and the ground should be pretty good. And the change should be... the more serious the change, the better the grounds have to be. You want to take out a comma, it's not a big issue. You want to change a sentence, it is a big issue. The project underway in Bombay, if I remember correctly, is to make a one-volume Srimad Bhagavatam. I believe that's what it is. It's either one volume or it's a reprint of Srimad Bhagavatam, for which the BBT doesn't even have proper digital files. Books were last composed on a 1970s photo typesetting machine, and there is no usable digital copy, and so it has to be constructed. So they've used the Vedabase as the best available digital copy. And then they have to go back through that and find all the errors in the Vedabase, things that where it doesn't match the book, scanning errors, essentially. And then there's a list of errors that have been detected over the years, really, in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. Some of them are diacritical errors. Some of them are omissions from the text. Some of them... I could give you a representative sample, actually. There's a conference called Errors in English Books. And people who find errors, usually our translators, but sometimes other readers, are invited to say, hey, this is an error, or it looks like an error. And then Dravida, who runs the conference, really, it's a one-way sort of a thing. You send it to him and he does something about it. He looks back at whatever the manuscript is and either verifies that it's an error or says, no, it's not an error, and then that's recorded. If it is an error, it's fixed. For example, there was one about Arjuna and the Lord having copper-red eyes in the first canto, and something was wrong about the way it was edited, and the point that Prabhupada was making got lost. It just wasn't right. I forget the details, but I can look it up. And so it was fixed. It said, hey, this is an editing error. Prabhupada had it right. The editors had it wrong. So that was fixed.
So how did that fix by Dravida, which was later rescinded? How did it go through in the first place? I'd like to be an example of someone paying.
It's been rather explained at some length. Could you bring me to my laptop?
Actually, I have the key.
It was that one involved partly something Prabhupada had written and partly something that I'd written. That is, what was it? Initiated was the term.
Initiated.
One of the initiateds had been supplied by Prabhupada.
Huh?
One instance of initiated had been supplied by Srila Prabhupada, and the other was supplied by me as the editor the first time around. So what you're talking about really is one of Prabhupada's words. So Dravida looked at it and said, well, this is contrary to known fact, because we know that in the succession being talked about, this person wasn't initiated by that person. And so he looked at it and said, well, twice it says that he's initiated by one of them. You know, there's no basis for in the manuscript. That's Jayadvaita Swami's initiated. And so you've got one initiated there, but we know that that's contrary to the understood history. And so that appears to be misleading for the reader. It will confuse the reader. And so, and I think also, in my opinion, with a bias toward, you know, people are misunderstanding the philosophy anyway, and this will only increase it, he thought to revise it. Now, let me find.
Yeah, and my question was then, did he submit it to somebody? Or?
He submitted it to me, and I disagreed with it. I said, I would leave it. I wouldn't change it. And he, hold on a second, initiated, or what was the other word?
Accepted.
Accepted, yeah, let me find that here. If I have it. Accepted, yeah. Initiated. Accepted. Let's see if I get it. Okay, here it is. Here's the details. The relevant passage was second paragraph, chapter summary of Adi Lila chapter 1. And the original first edition said, the direct disciple of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was Narottam Das Thakur, accepted Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti as his servitor. So he accepted Vishwanath. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur accepted Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who initiated Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who in turn initiated Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, the spiritual master of Om Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, Goswami Maharaj, the divine master of our humble self. So that second sentence in the second edition became Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur accepted Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who in turn accepted Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Okay? Now, why? I'm just following my explanation that I wrote down. We know from history that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur received diksha, formal initiation, not from Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, but from someone else. And Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji in turn received formal initiation from someone other than Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The text therefore appears to say something that isn't true. Moreover, it seems to give the impression, wrongly, that what Srila Prabhupada is describing here is a line of succession by diksha, formal initiation, when we know that for these acharyas especially, the connection was through shiksha, spiritual instruction. And to make this matters worse, this confusion arises in a chapter that takes pain to make clear how the diksha guru and shiksha guru, though in some ways one, are different. Several devotees noticed this and brought it to the attention of the BBT, and so for the second edition, the editor felt obliged to give the matter his attention. His first step was to examine our original source text. In this case, the March 1960 issue of Back to Godhead, where this portion of CC was first published. Here's how Srila Prabhupada had it. From Goswami Krishnadas Kaviraj, the direct disciple is Srila Narottam Das Thakur, who accepted Vishwanath Chakravarti as his servitor. Vishwanath Chakravarti accepted Jagannath Das Babaji, from whom Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated, and Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, the spiritual master of Om Vishnu Pad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, etc. Note here, as our editor did, that for the relationship between Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, the word initiated doesn't appear. It came from me. The sentence needed a verb, so in editing for the first edition, I supplied one, the word initiated. That still leaves us with Srila Prabhupada saying that Jagannath Das Babaji initiated Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, something he never says anywhere else. So, given that in the context of the chapter, the reader is likely to get the impression that the connection here was by diksha, an impression contrary to historical fact, our editor revised the sentence to say simply that Srila Jagannath Das Babaji was the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a statement that is clearly and uncontrovertibly true. Some devotees, however, took issue with this revision. In particular, Dira Govinda questioned it and asked us to reconsider, and so we changed it. And so in the next printing, it will be Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur accepted Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, who initiated Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who in turn accepted Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. By restoring the first instance of initiated, we stick with Srila Prabhupada's original word, and by retaining the second deletion of initiated, we leave out a word that Srila Prabhupada never had there to begin with. Some devotees may argue over what the newly restored word initiated means here. Did Srila Prabhupada make a mistake about the history? Did he mean initiated as he usually meant it? Was he contradicting what he says later in the chapter? Does it matter? We'll let others argue about that. As Prabhupada's publishers, we simply want to present Prabhupada's words as transparently and faithfully as possible, and it's for the readers to read and understand them. It's not just a question where Dravida looked at it and said, oh, initiated, you know, that supports another philosophy. It wasn't as simple a case as that, if someone wants to make out that case. There were manuscript issues there. There was an initiated there that was never there to begin with. There's an initiated there which is definitely puzzling. In a chapter that's about initiation, Prabhupada said someone was initiated by someone he wasn't initiated by. So it wasn't just a question of Dravida being, you know, way out and in left field somewhere, out of touch with the text, out of touch with textual issues. Rather, he had grounds. But
so when you said that you didn't agree with it,
yeah,
what did he do? He said, no, I'm overriding it?
No. He said, well, I really feel strongly about it. I said, okay, on your own, you know, you're a mature editor. I think one way, you think another way. I won't override you.
So that's probably one thing that many devotees are worried by and bothered by, that ultimately it's just some people's decision.
Ultimately, everything in the books is some people's decision.
Yeah, but why this? Then people in the future can go on changing like that.
True. And the readers can go on saying, whoa, what about this?
Yeah, then like, just like you said, this we have printed it, you can discuss it whatever way you want.
But means that we took the criticism in
into account, brought it as closely as we could to what Prabhupada originally said.
What if it not been noticed and people would think this is what was written?
Well, you know, if they'd thought that, in the overall context of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it wouldn't make a hell of a lot of difference. Because you can't take that one little initiated, one word initiated in one paragraph and turn the whole philosophy upside down with it. It just doesn't make much of a case.
I mean, exactly.
You may. But, I mean, there are people who hold this up and say, see, this proves that something or other. But So my point is that it's rather, all things considered, a rather marginal example. It's not something where you know white has become black or black has become white. It's simply a puzzle that was addressed one way the first time and another way the second time. Neither solution being particularly satisfying. If you say accepted instead of initiated, you've got the problem that you didn't follow the author. It all makes sense. You don't have any contradiction in the philosophy. You don't have any contradiction to historical fact. But you have the problem that you changed a word by the author in a crucial passage. If you go the other way, you totally contradict the history. You're at odds with the philosophy, as stated in that very chapter, that you can only have one initiating spiritual master, and now it seems that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had two. So you're contradicting... my point is, then you've got, on one side, either you've got, fits the philosophy, it makes sense, and it's you know farther away from the author. On the other side, you've got closer to the author, doesn't match the philosophy and doesn't match the history. Now, which is... Excuse me?
It doesn't match the philosophy.
Doesn't match the philosophy because the philosophy, as stated in that chapter, is that a person can have only one initiating spiritual master.
That becomes a point for discussion.
It becomes a point for discussion. Okay, you tell me. Is it contradictory to the philosophy that a person can have two initiating spiritual masters? It's not. You can have two initiating spiritual masters.
It doesn't say a person can have two initiating spiritual masters.
It says that this person was the initiating spiritual master of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when we know that he also had another initiating spiritual master.
You earlier said that, but he was formally initiated by somebody else.
That's diksha.
Well, okay, so then, but I'm curious about one more thing historically. So when you first changed that word, what? How did that happen? I'm just interested.
There was a verb missing, so I supplied it.
But you didn't think that we should not be initiated? Because today you wouldn't supply that word, isn't it? I was just curious. Maybe is it because you are yourself very...
I think what I did is I just took the nearest verb and repeated it. That's a common editorial approach. You just take the nearest verb and repeat it. That's what I did.
Yeah, but at that time, like today you would think philosophically that's not the right thing to say.
Well, today, having reviewed it, we did exactly what we did. We said that he was the spiritual master of, which doesn't accept and doesn't initiate it, it just leaves it open, which is probably a better solution than just putting an initiated and turning one dubious initiated into two dubious initiateds. Now we only have one, and it's dubious, but it's Prabhupada's. Otherwise, you had two, one of his and one of mine.
No, that's different.
So you asked me how I would do it today. This is how I would.
How you did it then? I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's how I did it then. Is I just picked the nearest verb and repeated it.
Were you unaware at that time of the history?
I was probably pretty vague about the history back then. That was 1975, roughly.
Yeah, we weren't very
aware. We weren't very like Vipin Bihari Goswami and all of that history. It's not very widely circulated in this kind at that time. Would a footnote help? I don't think so, because what would the footnote say?
It could say that in the original edition, we were unaware of the actual history, and since then we have more knowledge and therefore we've made this change?
Well, the final one is being done. Gee, you know, to explain every editing thing that way
it would make less changes, and then it would.
Well, it makes more perplexity because then now you're adding something to the book, whereas previously you were just trying to make it as the best editing that you could do. Now you're giving the best editing and saying you're sort of commenting on what Prabhupada said and say, well, Prabhupada said initiated. But he couldn't have really meant initiated. He must have meant this because this person was initiated by this person. He couldn't have been initiated by that person. That's why we did this or that. You start to introduce a whole lot of commentary, really, into the book, which is probably gets you further afield from the where you originally want to be.
There was one instance, a friend, when I was living in Alachua, a friend came over and said, oh, I just read this big purport of Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, let me just look at it. Now, why want to read it? And it was an edited edition of the book. And the repetition, three times, Prabhupada's stressing that, had been removed, which we know sometimes Prabhupada would repeat something, but there was reason for it.
Let me tell you this about Srimad Bhagavatam. Whatever edition of Srimad Bhagavatam you read was published during Prabhupada's time. There is no, although there are people out there on the internet selling you the original pre-1978 Bhagavatams, all the post-1978 Bhagavatams are the same edition that we published during Prabhupada's time. Someone is trying to mislead and cheat you.
So how can that be then? You mean there weren't two editions? Because we saw...
There were two editions, if you were in first canto, there were two editions published in Prabhupada's time.
So there had been some editing.
I consulted Prabhupada, and with his approval, there was a second editing of First Canto that was published in 1975.
No, this was the First Canto, but it was before the fourth. It was somewhere in the first.
Whatever was done, unless it was a very small thing, was done in Prabhupada's time. There are no major editing. I mean, there's a spelling mistake or. Prabhupada didn't get into those sort of small things. He didn't look at every sentence, or he didn't look at the page proofs and say, "Oh, why is this repeated twice, or this or that?" It was just done. I can tell you that as the editor, we didn't routinely say, "Prabhupada, here's the editing, the final page proofs for the fifth canto. Could you look over these and see if it's all right?" We just sent it to the printer. Yes, people who say everything in a book is personally approved by Prabhupada really don't know what they're talking about, or do know what they're talking about and not being straightforward.
I have a question about two initiations. Mm-hmm. You said we don't have two initiations in a Tathagata, but I'm thinking an answer. We have both the Harinam initiation and then the Diksha initiation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. I mean, right, there were all sorts of ways to say, well, what in the world did Prabhupada mean when he said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated by, who was it? Vishnu Chakravarti, whoever he said here. Jagannath Das Babaji. What does it mean? I can't tell you what it means. I don't know anybody who could, reliably, confidently tell you what it means, that we know that Prabhupada meant this. I certainly don't. I don't know anybody that I would have confidence in to say, yeah, if that's what he tells you, it must be right. We could theorize, we could speculate, we could say, well, maybe it means this, maybe it means that, you could accommodate it this way, you could justify it that way. And that's basically what we're saying is, hey, here it is the way Prabhupada said it, you go figure it out. Because we're not going to try to do it.
Okay, I mean, the only point I want to make is that it does seem like you can be initiated twice.
It seems like it?
You can be initiated by two different...
Yeah, which is a problem, because in that chapter, Kaviraj Goswami distinctly says, you can't.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I say the present version is closer to what Prabhupada said and appears contrary both to history and the philosophy. Now, that can somehow be reconciled. Somebody says, Prabhupada didn't mean to, you know, he meant something and he wrote initiated. Someone says, initiated in this case meant something else. Someone says, well, that initiation really didn't count. Or someone, you know, you can give 5 or 10 different explanations. And any one of them, or more than one of them, could be true. I can't sit here and tell you what it means, because I don't know.
You know, I just wonder how you would consider this question. Like, of course, Arjuna, he had a formal initiation from, you know, whoever his family was. Would we consider that Krishna initiated him? I don't know if he would or not.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a spiritual master. No question.
Right. Is Krishna the initiating spiritual master? You know, these are the questions that you get.
So I was bypassing all those questions. So my only question from the beginning was, here is an instance that Dravida made a change
mm-hmm.
based on his own final decision,
mm-hmm.
not on anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, now I don't know how to frame that. That was my original question. I think most devotees.
I think the question is, what are the safeguards against an editor arbitrarily?
No one should make a change.
Excuse me?
So I was asking the question, it would seem like a safe thing, and you said, no, we don't have a policy like that. It seemed like, and that was my question, not about the
is, well, let's,
so
what would your policy be?
Make a change just because, on the basis finally that they feel this is
of course. Well, yeah, I mean, we do have a policy, no one should make a change just on the basis of this is how I feel it should be. Anyone who's just going by feel, you know, this, I think, I feel this is a better, you know, that's, you've got to have some justification. You've got to have reasons. You know, suppose anything. You've got your articles of incorporation of ISKCON, Berkeley ISKCON. Now, nobody can just say, well, I feel it would be better if we made this amendment, or I feel it would be better if we made that amendment. That's irresponsible. But if you consulted your attorneys and you saw that actually Clause B places us in jeopardy, it places our nonprofit status in jeopardy, or leaves us, leaves us open to some sort of legal problem, or it's vague, or it could be interpreted two different ways, if your reasons became strong enough, then you'd consult among yourselves and say, okay, we should amend this. In other words, things shouldn't be done whimsically. And things shouldn't just be done because somebody feels.
But Prabhupada's books are not like that. That's what people say, that all the concepts of consideration would still be whimsical. That the very idea of change. I mean, I know there are many instances opposite of that, that you read something in the second edition, the rest edition, which you feel, you run and say, oh, it's fantastic. And then you go and see it's not in the first, and you feel like, no, this must be there. This is.
Right.
So I'm not contesting those things.
Yeah.
So I just want to be clear. It goes both ways. I've seen it. I myself see so many things in second edition.
I mean, the policy is...
The policy of change based on manuscript
mm-hmm.
is the only one that can be allowed.
Really?
Anything else, I think as a policy, should not be allowed is what people feel. So
really?
This idea that people...
I like that. I mean, that's the best kind of change, where you say, well, it's based on manuscript. What about when it's based on grammatical error?
Again, it gets, finally it comes to this point that when someone, like Dravida says, I felt like that.
No, it doesn't come to that. Even if it comes to manuscript. Let's say when it comes to manuscript. Rarely, I mean, you don't just say, okay, here's the manuscript. We publish what the manuscript says. It's we edit the manuscript and publish it. So now the question is, well, the first edition didn't match the manuscript. Second edition doesn't match the manuscript, which is closer to what the manuscript intended. That finally comes down to feeling, doesn't it? Because you can't say A matches verbatim or B that matches verbatim. Now you have to say, is A closer to the original words in intention, in purpose, or is B closer to the original words?
Then the idea that was originally the changes were made because based on manuscript that we actually have.
Correct.
It's not the only basis.
It's based on the manuscript, but it's not just matching.
Right.
It's not just, you know, well, this word is here, so this word has to be there. The thing is finally a judgment call. Every word in the manuscript, every word in the book is finally a judgment call. Like I sit there as the editor in 1972, and I'm reading the lines, and every single word in there is a judgment call by me. Because can it stand, or does it need change? Is it grammatically acceptable? Is it clear? Do the pronouns have antecedents? You know, so many grammatical and syntactical questions. And so every word is in there because I said, that's not a problem, that's not a problem, that's not a problem. That's a problem, I change it. This could be a problem. Is it a problem? And finally it comes down to a judgment call by me as the editor, or Hayagriva Prabhu as the editor, or Dravida Prabhu as the editor at the time, where he says, well, you know, is this clear? Is it grammatical? Is it wordy? You know, sometimes Prabhupada uses seven words five words where one would do it. Do we knock out those four extra words, which are of no consequence, or do we keep them on the grounds that it's Prabhupada's language? There's so many judgment calls in editing a manuscript. Prabhupada said, Devahuti, when he meant somebody else, he says he when he meant she. So many things are like that.
But they're all done, but now probably people are wondering, is there going to be a closure on this, or it will continue?
Yeah, we've discussed that just about every year at the BBT. Uh-huh. Every year at the BBT meetings, we talk about, should we have a point where we say, okay, up to the year such and such, we'll do it, and then close the gate, and that's it. And we always go back and forth about it, because we all like the idea that once and for all. And then there's always somebody coming up with something that you say, well, that can't really be left. Let me, errors in English books. Hold on, one little thing at a time. This is Conference Archives, BBTI, errors. Okay, where's errors in English books? I know there's such a thing. BBT, errors in English books. Okay, let's find some representative examples. Hold on. Okay, Pradumna forward a Sanskrit editor error there. Let me see some of mine because I've caught some. Hold on.
Do you think it's more complicated because they translated to French and Italian?
It's actually less of a problem in French and Italian and so on, because they don't have the problem of having to match exactly. You know, they don't have these are the words, they have to appear this way. They're going to get translated into another language, and there's what's... Oh yeah, I mean that happens every language, the first book we translate is Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
And it's always the worst job because it's the most urgently needed.
Most people prefer that first one. We just had a class in Geneva and everybody said, I like the old Bhagavad Gita.
Well, I mean, French is beyond my area of expertise. But I can say that other languages that we've worked in, German and many others, it's the first book that's done. Usually it's done by a translator who, not knowing translation very well, translates word for word for word, which is generally bad translation. I can